Hi there. This is the Work Show. September. What a gorgeous month. We're talking to Donna Williams of Feel Goods, an enterprising new agricultural business based in Athens, New York, but making a presence all over our region.
We pack Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and Fridays. So Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, we'll have people come in like 7:30, the drivers, because that's where we deliver, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, to load the vans. And then on Tuesday, people come in a little later, and then the majority of the packing people come in like around 9 to start building everything that we need to pack. We're increasingly having farmers deliver because they have larger vehicles than us, and they might be delivering big bins. The little tiny guys we pick up from, and then the bigger guys, medium guys, sometimes we deliver, sometimes we pick up. It kind of depends on the volume. Oh, you should look at the Sprinter. I don't think it's gone yet. It's really cool. Like, this is one of the things that, like, kind of changed the business in a way. Where's the Sprinter? Sorry. All right, so this is the Sprinter. This is all refuse. We have a pig farmer that comes and picks up all the stuff that's left over. So this is a cooler freezer at the same time. So we pack this the night before and plug it in.
Ooh, Melba, here come the cold man, and you know he keeps some good vegetables.
Ooh, let me call him. The Rainer! Ooh, Gantry, come on, here he comes.
better look out your window, come outside. You know your junior is coming home soon. You must have his okra. You must have his gravy. Severing, severing. Bop, 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 bop. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm a coal man. Oh, bro.
Sometimes we have to move things around. Like, you can't keep tomatoes stored at the same temperature you'd keep berries stored. Uh-huh. So we might have to pull something out and put it in a different cooler that's set at a different temperature. It gets surprising.
This is surprisingly complicated.
Yeah, it's surprisingly complicated. Yeah.
And now, are you doing all the systems, or do you have other people?
It's who you saw.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's us. Yeah, We're developing a new back end, but right now it's done by spreadsheets. I mean, it just, you know, so happens that I'm very good at spreadsheets because I spent most of my career being a banker doing analysis, and so the spreadsheets drive where everything is and how it comes out and how the labels are made and all of that, so... Uh-huh. There's a lot of people that try to do, like, home delivery, and they do something where the consumer can go shopping, like, oh, you know, I want to get broccoli, et cetera. That doesn't work. It's too difficult and too expensive to go to different farms and get a case of broccoli, and then a different place and get a case of string beans, and then a different place and get, because there's, at any one time, one farmer has different things that are coming out of production or different things that work. So I can call one farmer up and he'll say, you know what, my green beans are a mess. I'm not going to harvest them. And then another one, they're perfect. So you need to go to different farms to pull this off because we don't have these gigantic farms any really where in the Northeast, nothing like you'd see in California, obviously. So... You have to go to different farms. You can't do that if you're picking up small numbers.
Uh-huh.
So that's one of the reasons. There's a whole bunch of them why we don't give consumer choice. Like that's what works with the system, that people get a bag if they get what they get.
This is a song about vegetables. They keep you regular. They're real good for you.
Respond to you.
Some people don't go for prunes. I don't know. I've always found that if they...
Call any vegetable.
Call any vegetable.
Pick up your phone.
Call any vegetable.
Think I'm a vegetable.
Call any
vegetable. Lonely at home.
Call any vegetable.
Call any vegetable. And the chances are good. Vegetable will respond to you.
Rutabaga, 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 rutabaga.
I was hired by Green County to do an agricultural incubator study. They'd gotten a grant to hire someone to look at the feasibility of taking an old farm and turning it into a incubator for farmers that want to start up. Sort of like the same kind of concept as the tech incubator. You know, mm-hmm. Everybody gets together, share the copy machine, they share the infrastructure, etc. they're collectively all together so they can share ideas. So the idea was to do something like that. And there's a couple models of them in the country.
When was this?
This was 2010. So, you know, I approach that kind of with two things in mind. One, to get, you know, to do a good study, but to do a study that was actually executionable. Like a lot of times, counties say, you know, people have people do studies, but they're not focusing on, like, when you wake up in the morning, what do you do to turn it on? Like, what's the, what are the, from an operational perspective? That was one of the reasons they hired me, because I have it, experience in doing business plans as opposed to economic studies. And at the same time, I had gotten laid off at my prior job, which was a food company called Sahali Snacks, which was based in Seattle. And when the financial meltdown happened, just like everybody, they had to retrench. And at that point, with them, I was doing a lot of strategy work, you know, kind of stuff I call thinking big thoughts.
Were you doing that from here?
Yeah, I was doing it from here. So everybody's in Seattle. I'm thinking big thoughts, and I'm not an inexpensive employee. So I was laid off, which made perfect sense, because they really needed people that were just generating revenue at that point. I had had run sales for them at various times and done sales and marketing and a whole bunch of different variety of positions with them, because I started when they were very small, and it was started by two friends of mine from business school.
How long had you been with
them? I was with them for 4 years. Uh-huh. So I got laid off, so I had to find something to do in Greene County. I'd also decided I really wanted to start my own business, and I just had 4 years experience with a food startup. Sahali was, you know, Josh cutting mangoes in his kitchen when they first started up. So I knew, you know, that was the second startup I'd worked for, and I'd done consulting for other startups. So I wanted to come up with some kind of concept, and since I'd come out of the food industry, that kind of was the direction I was heading. So when I was doing this plan for them, I was also doing it with the idea of that hopefully I'd come out with a business concept, and that's exactly what happened. So while I was, you know, writing it, and I was looking at, okay, so what's the feasibility? Is there interest in local food? You know, why start an incubator if there's no market for the product that the farmers are going to farm? So that became pretty clear. This local food thing is a really big thing, and it's here to stay. And then I also looked at, so, okay, having lived sales and distribution in the food industry, it is a lot more difficult than people can even imagine. And it takes a lot of money to bring a product to market, just for sales and marketing. So I started looking at what the distribution was, and there isn't any.
Any distribution for the local?
For the small farmers. And, I mean, I'm generalizing. There are. There's farmers markets. There are CSAs, there's farm stands, there's smaller wholesale. But, you know, farmers markets are getting saturated. You know, just like anything, there's only, you know, farmers markets are basically a real estate. They're just like putting them all, you know, people, again, they don't think about things like this often. You know, when a town wakes up and they go, oh, we want a farmers market. Well, farmers are only going to want to go there if they can draw people there. So that means who's ever organized the farmers market has to make sure there's traffic, just like if you were going to put a shopping mall up, right? You know? So they're getting saturated. They're starting to cannibalize from each other. They're limited in the amount of times that they can be there, and they're not a particularly good use of a farmer's time, right? I mean, just from an economic perspective, you'd rather have a farmer farming than standing there chatting. Now, a lot of them love to do it in its important part, but it's not scalable. You know what I mean? And then the same kind of thing with the CSAs is CSAs are very powerful things and really have made the difference for a number of farmers up here. But that's mainly because of a nonprofit in New York City that does all the marketing for the CSAs. And that's Just Foods, and they've done a phenomenal job. They've probably done more for local food than anybody in the Northeast. But again, they're tapped out resource-wise. So the CSAs, they're not easy to do. They're a product that I think has a very limited market. There's only so many people that really will do participate in the CSA. And I kind of think of them as very special people because it's a challenging product. You have to put all your money up front. You have to be willing to take the risk with the farmers. You have to, generally pick up at a farm, limited number of hours. There's just a lot of things about it that can be great and can be challenging. So that's not a scalable thing. And, the guy that or the gal that works it down, in Clifton Park in a tech, in a business park, isn't going to do that. They just simply aren't going to do that. How to reach that market. So I'm looking at this and also knowing the grocery market like I do, I know that you can't put a local carrot into Price Chopper. And that's something people, or into food service, into local schools, into universities. And people go, why? They think a carrot is a carrot. A carrot, isn't a carrot. There's a reason that all the cereal boxes are shaped the same way. Because they have to fit on a shelf. If you really go through a grocery store, you'll see similar packaging. And that packaging all exists because retail requires certain things. Packages that stand up. So as just your Joe average consumer, you don't think like that. Well, that applies to the produce too. And you have to think about consumer behavior. So what that means is, frankly, it has to be manufactured, right? It's a manufactured carrot. It's designed to work in a grocery store. So if you want to put local food into for a mass market retail, you have to manufacture the local food to fit that distribution channel, which means you're not doing local food anymore. You're doing inefficient large-scale food.
Is there anybody doing that around here?
There are, some of the co-ops, the smaller retailers, they'll do all of that. They have a market that, people go in and they'll pick they're educated, they get that the local carrot is grown for taste and not for its ability to withstand long distances and have a shelf life and all perfectly grow straight. But think of the percentage of regular chain grocery stores to the smaller independents or places like Adams. You'll go into a grocery store and they'll say local food. Well, generally that will be more of the large commodity stuff, right? So you'll see apples. Apples around here, that's a big business. Those are big producers. Corn. Melons, things like that. But to do stuff like lettuce, farmer will tell you, we take lettuce, we take it dirty. We take a lot of things and deliver them dirty. We don't touch them. They come from the farm, they go in a bag, they go to the consumer. Because most of the time, if it's dirty, it'll stay better, fresher longer. If you want to spread salmonella or some bad thingy, pour water on it. Mm-hmm. So, that's where you get the problems with the E. coli, the salmonella contamination of, spinach from Mexico, because you got to wash it all together. You got to make it all look pretty. Nobody's going to buy a head of lettuce with a hunk, with dirt stuck on it. But we deliver it all that way. And the farmers will tell you that if they try to sell to the chains, they have to process it. So that's a whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. That's like getting people in, that's setting up a, it's not, none of it's easy. So some farmers will want to do that, some farmers are like, I don't want to do it.
Where necessarily what you want to say, the right thing to do. Necessarily what you want to do, the right thing to go. Necessarily what you want to grow, your own happiness. Just necessarily teach you what you want to know. Well, I'm suntanned and deep, so's the horse, and my hands are deeply gray. Old horses are grazing, it's amazing just how lazily he took the strain. Well, my big and spade are rust because I'm paid on turf to leave my square of cornfield bed. Grow what I grow. Tomatoes, potatoes, stew, eggplants, potatoes, tomatoes.
So when I distilled it all, I went, okay, so this is what's needed, a distribution channel that solves all of these kind of problems. So that's, it's like every component of Field Good solves a problem. You know, we use a certain kind of bag because it needs to go into corporate spaces. Can't be boxes. Like there, a lot of things that people start to ask, well, why don't you do this? It's very specific in how we approach things. And that, one of the key things I've come to realize through the process is that one of the reasons we have the industrial food system that we have is because of the enormous amount of waste that's generated through the whole distribution channel. So if you eliminate waste, you can be incredibly price competitive. So we have basically no waste. We get it from the farmer, we put it in a bag. And the only time, the only reason we don't have waste is that I don't let the consumer choose. The minute he gets to choose, I have to manage inventory, I have to go to multiple farms, and by choose I mean say I want broccoli this week. And it just changes the whole dynamic. You know, in a way, and I had an old-time farmer say this, he goes, oh, I get what you're doing. You're the vegetable peddler. So in some ways, it's sort of going back to something like that, where you get what you, you know, you get what's available, and you learn to do stuff with it. So the learning is a really important thing, because people don't know what to do with the tomatillo. That's what we're putting out this week. So we give them recipes, we, you know, tell them the real basics, you know, take the paper off. You know, things that, you know, don't wash this, peel this, don't peel this.
You do that all in a
email newsletter, and then a paper newsletter, and on our website.
So does paper go out with each bag, or is it a...
Yeah, they get an email newsletter on Monday, the beginning of the week. That has pictures and everything. And then that has links to everything. I mean, the internet is a big part of why this works, too. So, you know, to write out recipes all the time would not be viable. So we find things on the web that we like. So we say we use a couple criteria. You know, less than 15 minutes, less than 4 ingredients, and maybe a 6-year-old will eat it. You know, that's the criteria for the try to recipes
and
that we look.
Who's looking for this? Everybody, or you primarily, or
me? I have one of our salespeople does the newsletter, and then Hattie will do the newsletter, and she'll my stepdaughter, who's uh-huh. So during the summer she works for us, and then Susan will do it, and Meredith will do it too. So part of the you know what I'm going to, like, sales and marketing team, if you will pull the newsletters. I'll review them. And I kind of have a sassy voice, I guess. I'll, like, add that. You know, like, last week I lectured people about eating their vegetables, like their mother said. It's kind of, they're fun. I try to make them funny. I think we've got a unique bent because we also really push the wellness aspect of it, which isn't all that complicated when you think about it. If you get the vegetables, you eat the vegetables.
Yeah.
And you don't go to the grocery store, which means you don't buy the cookies. It's really straightforward, and it can have a profound impact on the way people eat. And kids, I mean, it's fun. You get the bag every week. We've got all these emails. People are like, woohoo, it's Christmas. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got companies that they're like, oh, everybody. It's very morale building for some companies. Because, I mean, you know, there's places we'll deliver 30 bags. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're like, what'd I get? What'd you get? What do you do with it? And so it can be really a powerful thing for changing behavior.
So talk about that distribution side of things.
I'm going to multitask a little bit. Yep. In terms of, you mean like the basic sales and marketing?
Yeah.
We do a couple different things. We target, see, I came from a corporate world, so I know how to talk to, you know, theoretically, I know how to talk to corporations, and I know how to position things, and I know what they're concerned about. So there are CSAs or different companies that will try to get things in the company, but they don't have that kind of experience, because there's some very real issues in it that you're dealing with as a large business. So we'll go in and pitch to the HR folks, generally, because it seems... You know, companies have to. They're mandated often by their insurance provider to have some kind of wellness effort. So what, you know, what are you going to do? Like, have another walk at lunch? You know, so they're looking for things, and this works for them because that's the pitch. They don't have to pay any money. The employees do. They just have to promote it to the employees, and it works. So that's where we go into is networking through the HR people. And then, you know, word of mouth is really powerful for us. And then we have things we call community sites, which is really becoming fascinating in terms of where they're showing up. I think it's really cool. We're in, like, public libraries. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in salons. We're in places, you know, one of our biggest sites is a place called Finn the Fishmonger. And it's like this perfect small business marriage. Mm-hmm. They do fish. We do vegetables. They have retail. Produce is really a hard product to do. Think about it. Unless you have a lot of traffic, you can't sell produce. It goes bad. It's got to constantly turn. It can't sit on the shelf. So you got to have enough volume to have a justification for the truck to come, to drop the produce. It's really hard to do. Because these guys, we deliver 30 bags to Finn. That means every Wednesday, 30 people go to their store. And they walk out with vegetables and something else. You know, they go to the store. So it's a really powerful thing for them.
What's the presence in Columbia and Greene County at this point?
Not very big. Not very big at all. In terms of my customer base, it's de minimis.
Where is your customer base?
Our customer base is in the, I would say, you know, the wealthier suburbs of Albany. Uh-huh. It's interesting because the product is a phenomenal value. Like, if you were to price out what we give you and buy it in the store, you know, there's times where my $20 bag would cost over $30. And there's times that it doesn't. But it doesn't really appeal to a more middle-class consumer, which is something I really want to work on with the companies. It seems like it's really more of an educated customer,
Like, what goes in a bag? What would be in a bag this week?
This week, they're getting... Oh, when you have a chance, can you give me the count so I can run her her numbers? This week, we're getting... they're getting cherry tomatoes, sun gold cherry tomatoes. They're getting certified organic green beans, tomatillos, Tuscan kale. Some people got three different kinds of peppers, poblano, cubanel, and banana. Peaches, they got Saturn peaches, the donut peaches, and then a certified organic salad mix. And then the guys that get the bigger bags got either they're called Tuscan or sugar cube cantaloupe. They're like a specialty cantaloupe. So this stuff's cool stuff, you know. And like I said, we tell them what to do with all this kind of thing. And it's stuff I try to find stuff often that you wouldn't see in. Like one thing I actually had farmers grow for me is something called a Caraflex cabbage, but it's also known as the conehead cabbage. It looks like the coneheads from mm-hmm. Saturday Night Live. And it's common in Europe, and it's what they make sauerkraut out of because it's sweeter. You can't sell it. Like, the farmers don't like to grow because they can't sell it at a farmer's market. Because people are like, what's that? They just are like, I don't know what to do with it. We put it in the bag, and people are like, woohoo, this is really cool. It's a totally different environment. Because, like, there's nothing different from it from a practical perspective in terms of what you do with it than a regular green cabbage. It just looks funny. So...
Do you ever put in like bread or cheese or any or sausages and things like that? Or
we have what we call bread subscription, so you can get a different loaf of bread every week from Capulet Parish in Hudson. We have a pasta, which is fresh pasta from Knollcrest Farm, which is in Dutchess County, and it's a phenomenal product. And this is one of the things I wanted to achieve is like they're great manufacturers, really hard to get to market. And, you know, Elizabeth will say, you know, there's times that our sales have helped them make payroll because we can buy pretty large amounts. We do cheese from, you know, any local cheese guy we can find that can manufacture the volume that we buy. And that's it. We don't do meat. It's different. It has a whole set of different complications to it.
Do you have to deal with Department of Health and things like that? Or
no, we have a Ag and Markets warehouse license. We don't process here, and that's another reason because we don't do anything with water.
Yeah.
So we're no different than Ginsburg's or anybody that's doing distribution. So you know we have certain health requirements that we have, etc., and we get inspected and all of that, but it's not like a service that's actually processing food.
I'm gonna be round my vegetables, I'm gonna chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all. My favorite vegetable. If you brought a big brown bag of them home, I'd jump up and down and hope you'd toss me a carrot. I'm gonna keep well my vegetables, cart off and sell my vegetables. I love you most of all. I tried to kick the ball, but my tenny flew right off. I'm red as a beet, cause I'm so
people like me, like rush like crazy, run like deer.
your letter and tell us the name of your favorite vegetable.
I finished the report in June of 2010. I started working on the website in September. It's all self-funded. I funded the whole thing. I'm an old lady. You know, I'm 50. I've been working for 30 years. So a lot of it I could do myself. I didn't need to hire a lot of people. I hired a designer. You know, I put some money into that. I hired someone to help with the website, Kara Thurman. But I wrote the content. I could do a lot of the work myself. So I incorporated in January 2011, and then I launched in June of 2011. And one of the biggest investments I made is I funded a startup farm, a bunch of kids, because I wasn't sure what I'd get from the local farmers. One thing I had no clue about was how to buy anything from a farm. So I funded these, you know, I say the kids, you know, they're in their late 20s, early 30s, so they were growing for me.
In
Hudson, it's a farm called Common Hands. So they're actually doing I funded them in return for produce. And they've now grown tremendously. They've got their own farm, that they're renting space from a landowner in Columbia County. So, you know, that's turned into a big success, and I buy from them still, all the time. So, you know, I've done startups before, so I kind of knew what the best approach was, which was not, I didn't want to raise money because I didn't want partners, and I didn't want the baggage that comes with having investors, because I've lived through that. So I just started, you know, really scrappy. I used my dad's Ford Taurus station wagon as a delivery vehicle, you know, until I figured out enough. And then I hired, I got a high school kid as an intern, which turned out to be phenomenal. Without her, the business wouldn't have been around. And, you know, I rented spaces in three different places, and just did the scrappy stuff. And it's still, you know, and I've been able to just keep, you know, gradually building. And that's kind of a decision we're making as we've been growing incrementally. I mean, our growth rate's been gigantic. But it hasn't been funded by big marketing campaigns or a big investment from an investor. So, and that's something I debate whether I want to go out and raise a lot of money or not.
Let me just to step back for a sec. Give me some of your background. Where do you hail from, Donna?
Well, I was born in Syracuse in a log cabin. I grew up in Syracuse. I went to Mount Holyoke College, and then I went to New York City. And I've got an incredibly diverse background, which, ironically, every little bit of my background is kind of useful in this. And it's a very... It makes no sense. I was an investment banker during the LBO junk bond days in New York City, Michael Milken, Drexel Burnham, Wuha, all that kind of thing. So I did that. And then I didn't want to do that anymore for a whole bunch of reasons. So I went to business school to sort of not be an investment banker. unlike most people. I did it because I wanted to get in and do something more operational or marketing related. I wanted to get in the book publishing industry. So I ended up working at Doubleday after business school. And then I went to, and I worked in business book publishing. And I did everything from editorial to marketing, etc. And then after that, I went to Times Mirror, which doesn't exist anymore. And I ended up doing some of the more traditional stuff that I knew how to do, which was strategy work, thinking big thoughts. And 1 year I bought 13 companies, you know, for the company. And the next year we sold everything off. Mm-hmm. Kind of, you know, and I was like, I just don't want to do the big company thing. But I worked in consumer. What I did do then was consumer health publishing. And I worked with my former boss, who left the company once they closed down all his division, you know, what he was running, to start what's now the largest consumer health publishing company in the country. So I wrote the plan for that. So I know a lot about consumer health. Then I went to an internet company startup during the .com thing. You know, we took it public. You know, it blew up.
Were you moving all over the place? Or were you
no, this is all in the city.
Okay.
So I did that. And then intermittently I would do different consulting things. I worked on basically the thing was the first iPad, in the early 90s, believe it or not, mid 90s. So after, the internet company blew up, I said, you know, I don't want to be in New York anymore. So I went out to Portland, and I was there for a little while and I was going to run a digital publishing company, but they ran out of money literally when I was driving through Idaho. and I'd gone past Kansas, so I'm not going back again. And then I say, like, the universe conspired to change my life. And, you know, when you think about it, like, why am I in Greene County? None of it makes any sense. And what happened was I had terrible back problems. I had ended up having 3 surgeries in 6 months, including a spinal fusion. And then just all sorts of other complications happened, like the fact that this company was, you know, I got there and I had to fire everybody kind of thing. And they, of course, had no money to pay me and all this. So that was a whole saga. So I ended up basically, you know, at the age of my late 30s, living with my parents in Greene County. So I had gone
were
from...
Were they from... Or how,
no, they from? Had... they were building a house at Sleepy Hollow Lake as a summer place. So, because I ended up having spinal fusion surgery in New York City. So, and I suffered from major depression. I've always had depression in my life, and this really hit. So, on top of the back thing, I'm seriously suffering from depression. So I wound up here. And I was like, all right, you know, I'll go back to Portland at some point. And then more stuff happened. And then I was like, screw it, I'm tired, I'm done. I will find a way to make a living in Greene County. I am not going back and being an executive chick anymore. I'm done with it. And so from there, I had to figure out how to make a living in Greene County. And I ended up writing a couple books because I had contacts in the publishing industry.
What were the books?
I wrote one called The Business Travel Almanac because I traveled, I traveled constantly for business. So it's sort of everything you need to know about business travel, and I profiled 10 cities and things like, you know, don't walk close to the sidewalk in New York City on a rainy day, you know. You will get, you know, just, you know, practical, you know, what hotels, what are the different airlines, etc. So I wrote that, and I did a pop-up book, and that's a separate thing. And I did some consulting work. I taught economics at St. Rose. I taught business at Columbia Green. You know, I got scrappy until I got a call from the Sahali Snacks guys. And they said, you know, do you want to sell nuts? And I said, sure. I'll sell nuts. So I started selling nuts, and, you know, we used to say we're the most overeducated nut merchants in the country because, you know, all the Columbia MBAs, and then Josh had a JD from Columbia Journalism School, or not a JD, he had his master's from Columbia Journalism School. So that, and I'm sure I'm missing some things that I've done over 30 years.
You met Kim somewhere in there?
Yeah, I met Kim. You know, when I decided I was going to live in Greene County, because I was also during this whole thing, you know, I was married and divorced in the mid-90s. I had also decided, well, you know, never mind. I wanted to be a mom, so I was like, I'll do the single mom thing. And then, because I'm running out of time. And I'm not going to meet anybody in Greene County was sort of my, you know, it's like I'm just not. So, and then I did. And then we ended up adopting Getty. And there's a whole side story there. it's just a strange, I call it like the Athens vortex. At least I'm sucked into the vortex and everything is sort of coming, you know, kind of comes together. In fact, a woman that's really the spirit of our sales effort, who's like just made the company in many ways what it is now, is somebody I met through the Ethiopian adoption process.
Uh-huh.
Now she's selling vegetables.
And how does your kind of, how does your own work ethic work? You know, are you, is it constantly?
I'm constantly
going to bed.
Yeah, I am. I've always worked, you know, I've always had jobs that are intensive, and I just think about, yeah, I think about it all the time. It's hard for me to break away from it, and it's particularly hard with a startup, and I don't know if people really get it or not when they start to start these kind of things, but it's not really any different in some ways than having a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't get to not do this. I have all these people that work for me. I have all these customers. So I can't, you know, sort of like, you can't not do the midnight feeding.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You have a baby. You don't get to just say, well, I don't want to do it anymore. So it's really hard to not be constantly involved in the business, particularly something like this where you're dealing with this gigantic variable of the weather. Right? I don't have a you know, the farmers don't have manufacturing plants that have specific numbers that are going to, like, spew out of it at the end of the day.
Is there a seasonal aspect where it suddenly starts to go quieter, or are you dealing with a different sort of produce all through the winter?
From our perspective, summer slows down, interestingly enough, because people have more options when they're on vacation.
Uh-huh.
So, and we deliver all year round, and sometimes the winter, I mean, you know, sometimes, I mean, we're so new, we're still learning everything, but our seasons are driven by the desire of our customers to get produce. And so in the summertime, a lot of them have their own gardens, or they, you know, they're going to farmers markets, and, you know, yeah, they have more options, so they'll put it on hold. So we'll have people that'll just put it on hold all summer long.
And then in the winter, you're dealing with outhouse vegetables, or things that have been stored?
Storage, greenhouse, and frozen.
Mm-hmm.
So we do three different kinds of things in the winter.
And then kind of as a final point, where do you find... do you need and do you find like a place where you can take a break from it to replenish and come back, or does it replenish itself as you're going?
Me psychologically, me emotionally.
And just, yeah. And
no, I don't take a break from it, and that's a real problem. You know, that's one of the reasons I hired Meredith. I need a mini-me, even though she's taller than I am, better looking, younger, to get me, to try to help me get a, you know, pull away from it. Because I also have a, you know, an 8-year-old boy. So, I mean, I do things like I coach the soccer team. And but I haven't done a good job at that. And, you know, I work every single day. I have to, because on the weekends I'm buying. You know, I'm talking to the farmers and saying, you know, what do you have? And I literally think I have it all set up on Friday, and then I'll get a call on Saturday and say, you know, we went out in the fields and the green beans aren't going to work. Or it rained, I can't harvest green beans.
But do you have a point like in the evening or something where you just sit in front of the tube or read?
Yeah, I do that kind of thing, sure. Yeah, I'll just, I read a lot. And we cook, you know, I come home and we cook. But I guess I was thinking more in terms of, you know.
The bigger replenishments.
Yeah, I mean, we shut down for 2 weeks in the spring this year because... it's simply too hard in April to find decent product. And we kind of need to, I need a break. And interestingly enough, I've learned that somebody told me, and it makes sense, that, you know, back in the day, the highest rate of death occurred in April and May. You run out of food. I mean, you really, when you do this, you really see that. There is nothing out there. I mean, we really have to scramble to find stuff.
Do you get away at that point, or do you just go to sleep for 2 weeks?
We go down. My parents have a place in Florida. So we just go down there. And then, well, 1 week I'm in Florida, the other week I'm doing all the stuff I haven't been able to do for the other 50 weeks of the year. But, yeah, the goal is, I mean... Any good entrepreneur, I believe this, basically continues to fire themselves. And, you know, I say that a lot of the things we do here has been forged in the fires of my incompetency.
We've been talking to Donna Williams of the Athens-based company Field Goods. Music this edition has been by Olu Dara, doing the great song Okra, the Mothers of Invention and their leader Frank Zappa doing Call Any Vegetable, The Who doing Now I'm a Farmer, which was an outtake on their Odds and Sods album, The Beach Boys doing Vegetables from Brian Wilson's great Smile project, and then finally Paul McCartney and Wings doing Junior's Farm. Until next month, keep on working.